Funding for Think comes from SMU Master and Doctor of Liberal Studies programs.
What's on your favorite taco?
They better have a lot of meat.
A traditional taco that has your onions, cilantros, and a good side of salsa.
I really just like the simplicity. It's just like cebolla, cilantro, and like a little bit of lemon.
It has to be fresh, everything made from scratch, no processed foods.
And avocados and cheese.
Tacos have become a part of Texas culture, with big cities creating their own taco identity. Austin, of course, is known for breakfast tacos. San Antonio for inventing the amazing puffy taco. Even Houston's finding its niche with the Korean barbecue taco. And as we just heard from Virginia Solis, Kenny Diaz, Hannah Lamardo, and Emilia Flores, North Texans have a few opinions about tacos themselves. With all the taco fusion, what's going on with taco culture in the heart of it all in Mexico City? This is Think. I'm Lauren Silverman. In this week for Chris Boyd, our guests this hour are Whitney Filloon, taco fan and editor of Eater Dallas, and Leslie Tellez, author of the new cookbook Eat Mexico, recipes from the Mexico City's streets, markets, and fondas. Leslie, Whitney, welcome to Think.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's start off with a nice definition of a taco. Is there one?
I would say that a taco is anything you can eat in a tortilla. Yeah.
Leaves it pretty wide open.
Yeah.
Now, when you moved to Mexico City in 2009, Leslie, and you didn't recognize, you say, the food, what did you see when you got there?
I'm from Southern California, and, you know, I thought that I knew Mexican food. I'm Mexican-American. I grew up going to the sort of nice Mexican restaurants in Southern California, El Torito's, Acapulco's, which if anybody's been to Southern California, these are all chains which serve a lot of, cheese blanketed on everything. So when I got to Mexico City, I did not see cheese blanketed on anything. I didn't see fried burritos. I didn't see fried ice cream. I didn't see a chimichanga.
Yeah.
No. What I saw instead was a lot of fresh produce, and I saw a lot of things being made in the moment. And I saw, you know, fruits, tropical fruits that I'd never seen before, and people making them into juices. And I saw, you know, flautas being fried on the street and being topped with these big handfuls of lettuce and, you know, dollops of cream and, and people making things from blue corn masa on the streets right in front of my face. I'd never seen fresh blue corn masa in my life. I'd seen blue corn tortilla chips, not actually where those would come from. So,
and you have a great description in the book. I'm going to have you read just a paragraph from what you saw in El DF, which is the city, Mexico City.
Sure. Yeah. So at the slow-cooked beef suadero stands, a taquero or taco maker would lift a hunk of meat out of a caramel-colored moat of fat, revealing beef transformed into a glistening, crispy-edged confit. He'd chop it to bits with a large cleaver, whack, 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 and slap a tortilla on the grill, drizzling on a little extra fat like a kiss goodbye. ¿Con todo?, he'd ask. ¿With everything? I learned to say yes. For the love of God, yes. Always con todo. He'd sprinkle on raw onion and fresh cilantro and place the taco on a plastic plate lined with a square of gray paper. Other hunks of meat remained bubbling in the fatty moat.
Sounds delicious. Now, also, one of the first things I imagine people think of is drizzling fat and in this tub of fat. I mean, you were pretty health conscious before you got there, right?
Yeah. Well, I had lived in Dallas before I moved there, and I lived downtown, and I took a boot camp class, an awesome boot camp class, by the way, 3 times a week. On the pool deck. So, yeah, I was like very conscious of my fat, you know, my body fat percentage and the whole deal, which many of us are across the country, not just in Dallas. But I got there and, you know, I was walking down the streets and I was hungry and I didn't want to go to a convenience store and buy something healthy. And, you know, now I know those things don't really exist anyway in Mexico like they do in the U.S. kind of processed convenience foods. And they don't, because as you're walking around, you can get other stuff. You can get a fresh juice. You can get a smoothie made with, you know, milk and oats and amaranth and fruit. And more than that, you can get a taco that's being grilled on this, you know, on this grill with thin steak or chorizo or pork. And so, yeah, no, I I sort of quickly got over my my healthy, I have to only eat, I have to watch every calorie, because the food just smelled so fantastic and I didn't want to deny myself. So,
Whitney, you didn't grow up making tacos, or I don't know if you went to Acapulco's. I don't know if that even existed here. But what was the image that you had of tacos when you were growing up?
So my experience with tacos as a child was pretty much limited to like my mother's, you know, weekly Taco Tuesday night, which literally consisted of the pre-made little corn shells. I think they're like El Phoenix brand that come out of a box, you know, with some grocery store ground beef browned up with your typical little grocery store packet of the very cumin-heavy taco seasoning. And then, you know, maybe a little pre-shredded orange cheese out of a bag. And those were tacos. That was all we knew.
And did you like them?
Sure. You know, I fully admit I still eat tacos like that to this day. Every now and again, I get a hankering for them. So
yeah, it's sort of comfort food.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, it's that childhood sort of taco archetype.
The little shredded green lettuce that my mom would put on top.
Precisely.
It was a good deal. But now, what do you consider to be a taco, or when you're not craving comfort, but more of a, I guess, authentic experience?
More of an authentic experience. So I think we're really lucky in Dallas to have, I mean, we have great authentic taco places everywhere. For me, sort of the gold standard, like my go-to when I want an authentic taco, is La Banqueta on Carroll, which is just this very small, maybe sort of dingy little hole-in-the-wall place that has this really weird ordering and payment system where you walk up, you order, you get your food, and you eat it, and you don't pay until the end. So it's kind of strange. It's very delicious. They have all your sort of authentic fillings, your chorizo, your pastor, your steak, your pollo. And it's really excellent.
That payment system is actually super common in Mexico City. That's the only way you do it. And I do street food tours there, and it's funny to watch everybody pull out their money. And I'm like, no. You have to. It's honor system. You walk up and tell them at the end, oh, I had, you know, three tacos and this and that. And you always pay at the end.
That's fascinating. I had no idea.
Yeah, you don't see that here ever.
Yeah.
I wonder how that developed. Do you have any idea?
I think it's more of a cultural thing, because no one is necessarily in a hurry there. So it's kind of seen as rude to like pull your money out of your pocket and say, I'm ending this transaction right now. So you just wait, you know, you have your tacos, you wait, you eat. And then at the end you say, how much do I owe you? And you go from there.
That sounds like they could try something like that here. Let's talk ingredients for a minute. The best place to start, of course, is with the most fundamental part of the taco, which is the tortilla. A lot of people are used to getting what Whitney mentioned, which is the pre-made tortillas, but that's not what they use in Mexico City.
No, the hard shell taco doesn't exist there. So, and really, I would say across Mexico, not just in Mexico City, the hard shell taco doesn't exist. You may find something in Tijuana because of its close relationship to San Diego, but everything is made with a soft corn tortilla that's been warmed on a comal or flat griddle. And sometimes people might pass them in a little oil or you know, crisp them just a little bit, but they're not crunchy. And it's not that bright neon yellow corn that you see in the package.
It doesn't look like a highlighter has been applied to it. Now, how do they – but making the tortilla, and you describe it in the book, looks very complex. I'm not going to lie. It sounds like a long process. How does it work?
Yeah. So making a tortilla from scratch is definitely – it's funny because it is one of those foundations of the Mexican diet, but there is no one magic set of instructions that you have to say, oh, follow these five bullet points and every time you're going to have excellent tortillas. I mean, this is something that's been made and refined and perfected for millennia in Mexico. And so, you know, as an American or somebody who doesn't know the cuisine, you can't just pop in and be like, yeah, I'm going to make tortillas and they're going to be perfect. I really wanted that to happen to me, but it didn't happen. So, but what you do is you start with dried corn. It's in Mexico, they use particular kinds of corn for tortillas. And here in the U.S., if you were going to make them yourself, you would seek out dried corn for tortillas. You don't want to use popcorn or anything like that. You take the dried corn, you boil it in a little bit of water and a solution, a white powdery solution known as cal in Spanish, or calcium hydroxide. Calcium oxide, it becomes hydroxide when you add it to the water. You boil the corn for a little while, not that long, maybe 15-ish minutes, depending on how much corn you have. You don't want it to overcook it, because if you overcook the corn, it gets mushy and gummy, and then your masa is too sticky and it's a mess. So you just want to cook it until the outer skin starts to come off. After that's done, you let it sit, usually overnight.
In the water.
Mm-hmm. And the water will sort of, when you come back the next morning and you lift the lid off the pot, you're going to have this sort of intense, not a very nice smell if you're not used to it, but maybe slightly chalky, maybe, a little minerally. At that point, you rinse the water. And in Mexico, some people take the water and they use it to cure clay pots. It has other uses, but a lot of people in urban areas don't do that anymore. So you rinse the water. You rinse off as many of the little skins as you can. That's the way I do it. Not everybody does it that way. And then at that point, you have these beautiful, glistening, shiny kernels of corn that almost look like marbles to me. And at that point, you take them somewhere to be ground. So that can be if you live in Mexico, not necessarily in Mexico City, because the small neighborhood mills don't even exist really anymore. But certain areas of Mexico, you take them to your neighborhood mill that grinds corn, and you bring put it in a bucket. You stand in line, and they pour it in the mill, and you have your dough at the end of the time. Or if you live in the U.S., you can use a hand cranked mill that might attach to your table. So you can pass it through a couple of times to get the right texture. But at the end of the day, you want to grind it with just a little bit of water. And so you're left with this really soft dough that almost feels like Play-Doh. It's like a cold clay is the way I describe it in the book. So it's just corn and water. There's no oil. There's no lard. I think a lot of people have this misconception that corn tortilla dough is somehow fattening or something like that. And it absolutely isn't. It's just ground corn and water.
That's amazing. Now, I can't imagine people here bringing buckets of their corn to some sort of mill, but could you grind it by hand? I mean, that's what they used to do, but obviously,
sure.
I don't know if people still do that at all.
People do in communities. I read a stat that 48% of Mexicans still live in poverty. So there are communities in Mexico that don't have access to a mill. They don't have access to a tortilleria. And so if you want a tortilla, the woman or the daughter, or the females in the family are in charge of grinding the corn on their knees on this lava rock, kind of sloped lava rock tablet called a metate that has a sort of rolling pin that you roll it, you grind it. So it's backbreaking work. I did this in cooking school in Mexico City. It took me 2.5 hours to grind 1 kilo, 2.2 pounds of corn. It's really difficult.
Now, Whitney, are you a fan of the one tortilla or two tortilla option? Because I've seen both of those here when you go to taco stands.
Yeah, I feel like the two tortilla system is very popular. I generally tend to remove the outer tortilla and just go for the one, just because I think it lets the filling sort of shine a little brighter if you don't have all that corn tortilla surrounding it. But of course, we're talking about your typical commercially made corn tortillas, which they're serviceable, but they're not really that great. So, for great tortillas, you really have to seek out a place that makes their own in-house.
And are there a lot of places that make their own here in Dallas-Fort Worth?
I would not necessarily say there are a lot, but there are enough if you know where to look. There's a really great place on Webb Chapel called La Nueva Fresh and Hot. It's really just like a takeout-only spot, but they have a giant tortilla machine in there. They are always churning out fresh tortillas. They make a really good taco. Also, some of your sort of newer, trendier places are doing it too, like La Ventana downtown.
Great. We'll get to more. You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, in this week for Chris Boyd. Join our conversation. Call 800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. We'll be back with more from Leslie and Whitney after a short break. Mm-hmm.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, a customizable evening master's degree for working professionals. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, in this week for Chris Boyd. And in a search for the perfect taco, our intern Jose Carreon talked to Dane Brinkerhoff from Flower Mound about what he likes and what he doesn't.
Good taco, you don't want too much tortilla. I've been to some places where there's two tortillas. It's just too much tortilla. Some places, one tortilla, but the tortilla falls apart. You don't want it too greasy. But you want a good sauce, right? It's like barbecue. If you can stay in business, you probably figured out how to smoke your meat, prepare it well enough. But if the sauce is off, you're done. Your green sauce, your red sauce. You have to have a good flavored sauce. Cilantro, onions. Yeah, I don't really like tacos that much, but when I do, I love them.
Our guests today are Leslie Tellez, food writer, former Dallasite, and author of the new cookbook, Eat Mexico, recipes from Mexico City's streets, markets, and fondas, and editor of Eater Dallas, Whitney Filoon. Both of them will be on a panel tonight at El Come Taco. That's at 6:30, and there will be tacos. I hear tickets are still available, so you can check that out. Whitney, we know Austin for breakfast tacos, and I mentioned San Antonio for puffy tacos. Does Dallas have any signature taco?
Well, Dallas's best-known contribution to the sort of taco universe would, I guess, be the brisket taco, which sort of rose to popularity here in the 1980s. And, you know, this isn't your barbecue brisket. This is like a tender, shredded brisket that's probably been, you know, braised in the oven for a long time until it's sort of falling apart. Usually served in a flour tortilla, maybe with some sautéed onions and poblano peppers. Usually some Monterey Jack cheese melted on top. And then the essential part of this is like a really savory sort of a brown gravy sauce that comes with it. It's almost like a jus. It's really good. And, you know, like many other, I guess, sort of prized culinary creations, its origins are somewhat disputed. Mia's on Lemon Avenue generally takes credit for sort of inventing the brisket taco. There's also Avila's, the sort of legendary Tex-Mex place on Maple. So you can get really great versions at both of those places.
Now, also, I've heard in Dallas you can get lobster tacos that are very expensive and some of the other fancier variety.
Right. Well, you know, we're very fancy here in Dallas, so we have very fancy tacos. So, you know, like your iconic chef, Dean Fearing, who used to be at the Mansion, he now does a very refined, like a barbecued shrimp taco at his restaurant, Fearing's, at the Ritz-Carlton. You know, it's probably like $18, but it's pretty great.
Now, one of the first recipes in your book, Leslie, is for tacos al pastor. Describe what these are.
So tacos al pastor are the iconic Mexico City taco. They were thought to have been invented in Mexico City. And what it is basically really thinly sliced pieces of pork that have been stacked on a roasting spit. So first they're marinated, and the marinade depends on who the taquero is and whether they want to use dried chiles, whether they want to use achiote, which is a natto seed that really gives it a bright orange color. Not everybody uses that. Everyone has, you know, closely guards their own marinade. But everybody does do the thinly sliced pork, stacking it on top like a shawarma, which is actually where the taco al pastor came from. It's a direct descendant of the Lebanese immigrants who arrived in Mexico after the fall of the Ottoman Empire. And if you're in Mexico, you know, if you're in Mexico City, you actually will realize soon enough that, oh, wow, there are actually quite a few Lebanese descendants here. Carlos Slim, who's the, I guess, the
richest
third
man
richest
in
man
world.
In the world now. He's a Lebanese-Mexican. Salma Hayek. Anyway, the list goes on and on. But yeah, so it's a direct descendant of shawarma, but the meat cooks on this spit, and the taquero is responsible for turning it, you know, to make sure that it cooks evenly. And the best taco al pastor meat is served late at night, particularly, I would say, as close to midnight as you can do it. If you're after midnight, even better. If it's in the morning time, be very wary, unless you're at 4 in the morning. But if it's, you know, it's not a 9 a.m. taco. It's a late night taco. And the taquero will shave off the best parts, or the best taqueros anyway, will shave off all of these crispy bits that have blackened, and, you know, as he's turning the spit around. And all of them have some sort of show that they do as well for these tacos. I think they're all artisans. And it's always men, by the way. You never see a woman taco al pastor, taquero, ever. And I've asked my Mexican friends about this, and they're like, well, it's really hot standing there. And I'm like, oy, oy, oy. It's also hot standing in front of a comal and making tortillas, yeah. Right? You see women doing that. Anyway. But yeah, so they'll shave it off. They'll catch it behind their back. They'll catch it, you know, off to the side. And it's always sort of slapped into their hand, which is lined with the tortilla. So it's really interesting. It's a visual spectacle, and it's always delicious.
That's so funny. That reminds me of when I was little and I'd go to a pizza place and you'd watch the guy throw up the pizza dough in the air and spin it around and give you a little show before you got, well, the American version of a taco in some way, the pizza slice.
Exactly.
You know? So that's funny. And there's a photo in your book that's really incredible of a man slicing a piece of caramelized meat from this vertical spit that you describe. I don't have a spit at home. I don't know if you do. Can you still make tacos al pastor?
You can. This was one of those recipes that I really – it was difficult because the best flavor in Mexico City, the best al pastor tacos are obviously – and the only al pastor tacos are the ones that are roasted on the spit. So how can you recreate this at home? Is it even worth it? And I think it is. I mean, I think – you know, if you have a grill, that would be, you really want a really hot heat and a blazing hot pan. So if you have a grill, that's probably your best bet. If you don't have a grill, a cast iron pan is excellent. But I think, honestly, what I found is the secret is marinating the meat in a little bit of lime juice and salt first, which really, to me, gives it a tang that I find in every al pastor taco across the board. And then, you know, you can make your own marinade. I use achiote and different spices because I talked to some taco makers in Mexico City and that's what they used. So, but yeah, you can still do it. I wouldn't give up. I also think having your, like some of the you know, the listeners mentioned earlier, having your raw onion, your cilantro, having these accompaniments, having pineapple is also really important.
Now, when I order tacos, there are two things that I generally expect, and I don't know if I should be expecting them, which are tortilla chips and salsa. They seem standard to come with lots of Mexican food here, Whitney. Is that standard?
That is standard, and, you know, occasionally sort of a more upscale new Mexican place will open, and they really try to, like, rally against this and not give people the basket of free chips and salsa when they sit down. And I'm going to say that every single one of them, within a few months of opening, they start to serve those free chips and salsa because it is, like you said, it's so expected. That's what you expect. That's what you want when you walk into any sort of Mexican restaurant, be it, you know, Tex-Mex or authentic. So, like it or not, people in Dallas need their chips and salsa.
Yeah. No, is that something that they do in Mexico or Mexico City, Leslie?
No, they don't. I mean, it's funny. Yeah, no, they don't. It's not traditional to go into any taqueria. And actually, I haven't seen any taquerias that serve you chips at all. Restaurants, on the other hand, and I know of one taqueria in Mexico, a chain that says they invented the taco al pastor. They do serve some chips with their homemade with a little bit of bean dip and some other stuff. But it's called El Tizoncito. I think actually there's a branch in Dallas. No other taqueria serves chips. But funnily enough, I had noticed last time I was in Mexico City that a few more higher-end restaurants were serving chips and salsa, which I thought was very strange. What a lot of people will do at different restaurants is serve bread with salsa.
Really?
And bread with a nice red salsa that you take a little bit of bread and you – dip it with your – all the salsas have a spoon, by the way. Nothing is dipped in the salsa. It's like – it's not a – you know, you're not just – it's a little more hygienic. You take your spoon and you drizzle it on everything that you're eating. So when I moved back to the States, I really missed the bread and the salsa, actually.
Huh. Join our conversation. Tell us what you like or don't like about tacos in the area. 1-888-69 – I'm sorry, 1-888-69 800-933-5372. Again, that's 1-800-933-5372, or send an email to think@kera.org. Now, do you see much of an influence? You mentioned the Lebanese influence in Mexico City from other parts of the country or other immigrants on the taco culture there, Leslie?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Mexico City is a... It's been a magnet for other immigrants around Mexico for forever. It's been the place where people have come to work. I think that's still true, but also as beach tourism has really boomed in Mexico, I think you're also seeing places like Cancun are now magnets for Mexican immigrants and for people from all over the world, actually. But yeah, in Mexico City, you still have this tradition of immigrants having started food businesses there, from other parts of Mexico. So sure, you see cochinita pibil, which is a special in the Yucatan. You see birria, which is a dish that's really popular in Jalisco, and the particular jalisense, way of making it. You see that on the streets. And in fondas, there's a great pozole place in the centro.
Pozole is a soup, right?
Yes, it's a hominy soup with pork, usually made with like a pork broth and little wonderful tender pieces of pork meat inside and topped with a bunch of different condiments, chicharrón, radishes, different things. But there's a wonderful place in the centro in Mexico City that serves a green pozole, which is typical to Guerrero. So, yeah, you can eat from all over the country there.
Now, in Oak Cliff, there are little taco places everywhere. And someone wrote in to ask the question, which I was going to ask you anyways, Whitney. How do you know which ones are authentic?
How do you know which ones are authentic? Just go and try it. Like, I think definitely to me the best thing about tacos is the fact that they're so affordable. You know, if you see a taqueria that you've never been to before and you're curious about it, I mean, of course, you can always turn to, like, the internet.
Yeah.
Somebody's probably tried it. There's a really awesome blog called The Taco Trail, which conveniently has reviews of just about every taco place in town. So that's a good resource. But, you know, be adventurous. Just go try it. You know, tacos are, you might put out $1.50, $2.25. You might spend $5 at one place. And if it's terrible, well, you know, no big loss.
Another person wrote in, Matthew. He says, we were in San Antonio recently and he fell in love with tacos filled with carne guisada, a kind of meat stew, and can't seem to find these tacos in DFW taquerias. Is this a uniquely San Antonio thing?
So this is something that you're probably not going to find at most taquerias, but you can find it at, like, your sort of sit-down restaurants that specialize in very home-style Mexican cooking. There is a place over on Northwest Highway called Tipico's. My friends are going to be really mad at me this because this is like the spot I'm not supposed to tell anyone about. But you go there, they make their own tortillas, they do guisado, they also have some of the best chips and salsa in town. So, sorry guys, secret's out.
I would also add that, guisado, the word guisado is actually... It's a type of dish that really signifies any stewed meat or vegetable mixture, super common in Mexico City. But I feel like I lived in San Antonio for a couple of years, and I feel like the carne guisado there is a very Tex-Mex dish. You know, San Antonio has a really long-standing, historic Mexican and Mexican-American population, which I think the carne guisado came from that. Since Dallas doesn't have that, you know, as far as we do have a longer standing Mexican-American population, but not the same density that San Antonio has. So I feel like also that's why you don't see it as much here, that specific dish, because it's more Mexican-American, I would say, than it is from a recent arrival from Mexico, perhaps.
Another ingredient that you have an amazing photo of in your book, several amazing photos, which is just of chili peppers. And there's tons of them. I have never seen this type of variety. Talk a little bit about the pepper and its use in Mexico City and tacos.
Sure.
Or in cooking.
So one of the top three, I would say, the holy trinity of the traditional Mexican diet are corn, beans, and chile. And the fourth one, I would say, maybe tied for fourth place, squash and tomatoes. So chile is used in almost everything. And there are fresh chiles and there are dried chiles. In Dallas, when I lived here, you know, I would go to Fiesta and see nice jalapenos or serranos. And I usually only bought jalapenos. I didn't know anything about serranos. And let alone the dried chiles, forget about it. That was very intimidating. I didn't know what to do with those. When I got to Mexico City and I started tasting these wonderful deep red colored sauces and, you know, smoky salsas and, you know, enchiladas that had, you know, not just the Las Palmas sauce that I used to buy in the can, but an actual fresh sauce made from dried chiles, I started to get very curious about the flavor profiles and what made each chile different from the others. So in cooking school, I was able to learn a lot about each chile. And in Mexico City, you really see Mexico as a whole is very regional. So a lot of states will use their own dried chiles. So the ones that I mention in the book are not a blanket across Mexico. Mm. Everybody uses only these ones. That's not true. If you go to Puebla, which is only 2 hours away from Mexico City, you see different types of chipotles, for instance, that you don't see in Mexico City. If you go to Oaxaca, forget about it. They have their whole own food culture with chiles that are super different that only grow in on a mountaintop somewhere. In Mexico City, you really see the guajillo used a lot. It's a sort of a maroon colored, not very hot chile, but that's what's responsible for this deep brick, dark, you know, deep, wonderful red color. You see the ancho, which is a little bit more berried, a berry color, larger. It smells divine. If you can, I highly advocate going somewhere where they have all the chiles out fresh. Unfortunately, a lot of supermarkets, they're in bags. But if you can go to a market that has them out so you can pick them up and touch them and smell them, that's a great way to learn. Anchos mulatos are a little bit darker than the ancho, a little bit more raisiny, prune-like smell. And then the different types of chipotles, which I can go on and on about. Some of them are smokier than others. The chile de árbol, the dried chile de árbol, which is the red, longish red chile, which is I think it's the hottest dried chile that you're going to find. The hottest fresh chile, of course, is going to be the habanero, which is used in different salsas and things in Mexico City, but mostly at the Yucatecan places because that's the most popular chile in the Yucatan region.
Where it grows.
Correct.
Huh. You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman. In this week, for Chris Boyd. We're talking with Leslie Tellez, author of the new cookbook Eat Mexico, Recipes from Mexico City's Streets, Markets, and Fondas, and with Whitney Falloon. She's editor of Eater Dallas. We'll be back after a break.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, specializing in communications or organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman in this week for Chris Boyd. We're talking with Leslie Tellez, author of the new cookbook Eat Mexico, Recipes from Mexico City's Streets, Markets, and Fondas, and with Whitney Falloon. She's editor of Eater Dallas. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372. Tacos and carrots. Now, that's definitely not something that I would have imagined seeing on the menu in Mexico City. But, Leslie, you've got a great tip on tacos dorados de zanahoria, which are carrots, or crispy carrots, right?
Yeah. So this comes from the chapter called Fondas in my book. And a fonda is a small mom-and-pop restaurant that's very casual, only open for lunch. And they generally serve a three-course menu that starts with a soup of some sort. The middle course would be a rice or a noodle dish, and then followed by a heavier main course. So it's called comida corrida. It's always very economically priced. And every day there's a different menu. Every place, no matter who it is, almost every place, because I haven't been to every place, but every place that I've seen, always serves a vegetarian option, which is really interesting. In Mexico City, you'd think, everybody only wants to eat meat. And that's mostly true. But you do find you have such a fresh variety and wonderful variety of vegetables in Mexico City that are available year-round. You can get a nice vegetarian entree. So I was out and I've seen things like broccoli fritters, and there's a lot of fritters going on, cauliflower fritters. But I saw these carrot tacos and I was like, what is this thing? This sounds really interesting. So of course I had to get it, and it tasted really simple, but just really delicious. And I thought, okay, I'm going to try to recreate this at home. This was before I even knew I was writing a cookbook. I just made a note to myself. So when the cookbook came around, I found that file and said, oh, maybe I can try to redo this. And it's funny because when I started making them at home, I thought, this has to be fussier. It can't just be plain old carrots and salt. Maybe cooked carrots. Maybe cooked carrots with cumin. Maybe, you know, should I put raisins? Should I do? What else can I do with this? And every single time, raw carrots and salt won out. All you do is put raw carrots and salt in a tortilla. You fry it like a flauta. You can secure it closed with a toothpick. I actually pan fry them. I don't deep fry these. And that's it. So when the tortilla is nice and golden brown, you take it out. Of course, like one of the people here mentioned, you want a good salsa to go on top, because the flauta and the taco is really, at the end of the day, a vehicle for the salsa. So I have a recipe for a raw green salsa that's excellent on this, on top of this taco. So I recommend that one.
That sounds really interesting. And I like carrots, so I think maybe carrot tacos would be a fun one to try. Now, most people don't have time for a three-course lunch in Dallas. You mentioned in these fondas, you start, you get first one, second, third. And sure, even though it's cheap, time here is different. We don't get long lunch hours. Whitney, is there any place that you can go that isn't, if you're not feeling tacos, but maybe you want some Mexican food, a sit-down experience that you recommend?
Sure. There's a really great new place over in Trinity Groves called Sugar Skull Cafe. They do have tacos. But, you know, maybe if you're in the mood for tacos and your significant other doesn't want tacos, you could go there. They have some really great sort of family style dishes like roasted pork and other things like that. But the tacos are really good, too.
Now, the menus that you mentioned, Leslie, that you see on these fondas, these mom-and-pop shops, they're each day they change and they feature what's on the menu. But you liked them so much, you started taking pictures of them.
I did. I was really struck with, you know, I didn't have a car when I lived in Mexico City, which is strange because if you are of a certain socioeconomic level in Mexico City, you get a car whether you drive it or not. It's kind of a status symbol. But we didn't have a car, so I walked around a lot. And as I would walk around, it hit me one day, man, you know, I think I walked past or I saw on one telephone pole three different menus from different places. And not just the fondas, but cantinas. You know, there's this tradition in Mexico City at cantinas that if you go in and drink, they'll give you free food. So they list every day the long list of items that you get with your food, and they generally go from lighter to heavier. So it might start off with a soup and then a taco dorado and then something like maybe carnitas. And so I would see these things, and they were different every day. So I thought, you know, this is really cool. This is really a record of what the city is eating and what the preferences of the people who live here are. So I thought that I really wanted to start taking pictures. I knew that possibly I wouldn't be in Mexico City forever as much as I wanted to be. And so I thought, you know, I really would like a record of this. So yeah, I started taking, thank goodness for the iPhone. I started taking pictures with my phone and saving them in a file on my computer.
And did the people just look at you like, what is this?
Yes, everybody
American
was like, what
doing?
Are you doing
or
taking
did they
a picture
see, did you
of
blend
a
in enough?
Pole?
I mean, you're Mexican American.
Yeah, I mean, I blended in generally, but taking a picture on the street of like a telephone pole or a stoplight is odd. So yes, I did stick out. I just tried to do it quickly and then put my phone back and run away. So yeah.
You can join our conversation. Call 1-800-933-5372. And let's talk with Edgar. He's in Hearst.
Hi, I would like to reiterate some of the few things your guests have pointed out. The variety in Mexican cuisine is so huge. My family's from Chihuahua, which is far, far northern Mexico. And, you know, having come to Dallas, it's almost, you know, I get the whole spectrum of it. But I think a thing to underline is from what I've seen etymologically, taco comes from Spanish for just wad. And there's been a few times when I've seen, you know, other Mexicans just say, just have a little taquito of something. And literally it's just whatever they can wad inside of a taco. So I think that might be kind of the underpinning to why there's such a diversity is just, you know, what can we put in this wad of masa that we've shaped in whatever shape? But I was going to reiterate, y'all were mentioning, you know, accompaniments, either the bread in Mexico City or chips. But one of the most traditional things I've seen is radishes, just, you know, a radish, four slices of radishes, and sometimes pickled carrots. And I was wondering if any of your guests had any insight into that. You know, radishes seem like something that'd be pretty common in Mexico from what I've seen, but how they ended up next to a taco, I don't quite get.
Great question. Any idea, Leslie?
You know, I don't know. I'm guessing it has to do with the specific tastes in the region and wherever that taquero came from. In Mexico City, specifically on the streets, you don't see radishes. You don't see pickled carrots or pickled jalapenos. In San Diego, I definitely do. And I think as you're inching more a little bit toward northern Mexico, you definitely do. The only accompaniments that I ever get on the street taco are going to be salsa, maybe some beans, maybe some potatoes. But yeah, I would say it has to do with the cook, you know, wherever that person came from and what he or she grew up eating. Radishes are super common and available year round in Mexico City. So I would say that's part of the reason why that they're there on the plate.
And the color is very pretty when you get that rim of pink and the white.
Sure.
Circle.
And I think the crunch, the freshness, the sort of palate cleansingness that you get is also probably a reason.
Which reminds me, I grew up in California too, and I ate a lot of jicama growing up. My mom put it in salads. She had no idea. She doesn't make Mexican food, but she always put jicama. And here I go to the grocery store and I pick up a jicama, which from the outside looks to me, I describe it as like a roundish, almost potato looking.
It's rather ugly.
Thing. It's not attractive. And every time I go up and get in line and get to the checkout, the person goes, "What is this?" And I have to tell them, "Oh, it's a jicama." Do they serve that much in Mexico City?
Oh my gosh, they totally do. It's super popular. It's interestingly, it has a reputation as a diet food because it has a high water quotient. It's very crunchy. It's rather bland. So it sort of takes up whatever flavor you put it in. Exactly. Then you're being very Mexican because they also they use it again as a vehicle on the street. It's very common to put chili powder, lime juice, salt, and it's really wonderful that way. And they do use it in salads. So your mom was doing something.
I don't know where she picked that up.
Yeah.
Interesting. You can join us. Call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Robin is in Burleson. Let's go to her.
Hi. I had a question about puffy tacos. There was a restaurant in San Antonio that claims to have invented the puffy taco, and the name of the restaurant is Tex Molina, and it's a small mom-and-pop type little restaurant. And another thing that they did was they had what they called like cups, where they would take the masa and they kind of fold it into a little cup, and you would either get a bean cup or a guacamole cup or a cheese cup. And I've never been able to find that here in the Metroplex. And sometimes my family, we just get in the car and drive down there just so we can eat there.
Wow, that's impressive. Whitney, what do you know about the origin of the puffy taco and these masa cups?
I don't know much about these masa cups. And puffy tacos are really kind of hard to find in Dallas because I believe a proper puffy taco, the puffy shell is supposed to be made like from a, you know, like a scratch made masa disc, not just by like tossing a tortilla that's already made into the fryer. So they're pretty hard to find. I believe that you can get them at, if I'm not incorrect, a place called Tupanamba. And then also a place, Rafa's Cafe Tex-Mex. But I can't really speak to their authenticity.
Now, a cheese cup sounds pretty Dallas to me or Texas.
Sounds very Tex-Mex.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that's something. Do you see that around here? or in?
In Mexico. No, I've never seen. Granted, there's all sorts of things that people do with masa, but the cups is a new one. I haven't heard of that.
Now, one of the questions that I have is about a style of tacos that is not made in the way we all think about. It's steamed tacos, something you talk about. But it's also a caller here has a question, and I think it relates to steamed tacos. Are you there, Anika?
This is Larry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, Larry, go ahead. You have a question about something else.
I called. I'm so excited to be on. But anyway, back in the late 90s, I was in Nuevo Laredo, Mexico, and a street vendor was selling tacos, and I selected his sweet potato taco, and he was keeping them warm with a container on the back of his bicycle with hot coals in it. The best taco I've ever had in my life. Do you know of a place in our area that might cater to that sweet potato taco?
Wow.
Sweet potato taco. I've never heard of this, but
Delicious.
Yeah, it does sound delicious. If anyone listening knows about this sweet potato taco, let us know, please.
Send me a tweet, at El Silver Woman. I will spread the word. But that gets back to the steamed taco questions. Let's see if, Juanica, are you there?
Juanita?
Oh, Juanica, yeah. I'm sorry.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to ask if you know of any good place to get tacos de canasta here in Dallas. I think that the previous caller was talking kind of like about that because that's how I see them. That's how I try them in Mexico. They have a canasta
and
they have like a lot of tablecloths in there, and they have the tacos there. They're kind of like fried, but they're not fried. But they have beans, potato, and it's just a regular potato, not the sweet potato. I haven't tried the sweet potato either. But they have been chicharron and the regular potato. They're delicious in Mexico, but I haven't found any here.
Whitney?
Yeah, from what I know, I believe they're also called like tacos al vapor. Is that right, Leslie?
Yeah, tacos al vapor or tacos sudados, depending on where you are in Mexico.
Right. And I know at one time, I don't know if it's still open, but a quick Google search should tell you, there was a place called Taco Rico. So Google Taco Rico, and if it's still open, they had them, and they were like a dollar, and they were really delicious.
But Juanita, also, I have a recipe for tacos de canasta in my book. So if you are up for getting a few friends together and buying a basket, I do tell you exactly how to make them. So
that's great. Again, the number is 1-800-933-5372. Now let's turn to Lynn in Dallas.
Hi, I'm here.
Hi, Lynn. What's your question?
Well, thank you for taking my call. Question is around being a really tall, white, blonde person walking into some of these little taquerias that seem so local and very indigenous to the community. I confess to being a little bit intimidated to walk in and feel like I don't know that I wouldn't get the best service they would have to offer.
I think we got your question, Lynn, since we're short on time. What do you suggest for someone who's timid, a little bit intimidated by going into a taqueria where, capaz, they don't speak English?
Right. Well, you know, if you walk into a taqueria and feel sort of out of place as the only white person there, I'd say you're probably in a good place. So that's definitely a good sign. But, you know, don't be intimidated. Even if the menu is all in Spanish and you can't really read it, you'll be able to pick out, you know, sort of your typical taco phrases, chorizo, pastor, pollo. So, you know, just brush up on your high school Spanish and go in there and order some tacos. They're always very friendly. And, you know, if worst comes worst, just point at what you want.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, in this week for Chris Boyd. Our guests today are Leslie Tellez, author of the new cookbook Eat Mexico, and Whitney Falloon. She's editor of Eater Dallas. Whitney, Leslie, thank you for coming in.
Oh, thanks. It was really fun.
Thanks so much.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington, and you can contact us via email think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Lauren Silverman. Thanks for listening and have a great day.